Welcome back, folks. Get a Grip on Lighting listeners, episode 45. On today's show, we have Brendan Puckett. Who's Brendan Puckett? Well, Brendan Puckett works for Westlight. Westlight has been in business forever, man. I think I got to go back to 1982, something like that. And they've been in the lighting supply game for a long time. Brendan gave us a good sort of summary of how they do their business, what it's like to be a lighting distributor these days, and what it's like to be a woman in the lighting business, which was always fun to talk about. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Kurtzon Lighting. Go to KURTZON.com, baby. Kurtzon.com, specification grade, over 100 years old, almost as old as Canada, Greg.
That's getting up there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can check out on their website, too. You know, we've talked a lot about all the fixtures and options that they have, but they also make sure that it's DLC rated, and that's important, as we know, for rebate purposes. And you'll see on the YouTube video, they have a site on or on their website, they have a link for DLC approved fixtures, and it's over 900 of them, and it's for all the unique applications that they cover, which is clean room and containment, food processing, wet location, vandal, hazardous, indoor sports. They have fixtures for all of those applications. And in addition, they have the DLC listing right there on the website, so it's easy for you to find. They cover all the Kelvin temps you need and make it easy to get that rebate.
Class 1, Div 2, Sun, UL, Intertech, NSF, ISO, IP, CCEA, and I think a lot of their fixtures are JAGA compliant as well. Also, check out Kurtzon at Light Show West and Boston Lights. They're setting up their booth there. They're hitting the road. So go to Kurtzon.com. That's KURTZON.com, baby. Kurtzon Lighting specification grade. And like every episode of this show, is the official sponsor is the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org. That's NAILD.org to join us. Join our association, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. But without further ado, I give you episode 45 with Brendan Puckett on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Brendan Puckett.
Thank you.
Say hi to Greg.
How are you guys? Hi, Greg. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Good to see you, Brenda.
Nice to see you guys.
Yeah. So your father was a founding member of Nailed.
Correct.
Back in 77?
Somewhere around that time, yeah. 76, 77. Yeah.
Wow. So how did they decide to start Nailed? Did you ever get the story of who got together and how it all came about?
Yeah, I mean, part of his job as a Western Regional Zone manager was, you know, calling on and setting up distribution for Westinghouse at the time, before it was Philips, and really trying to, he really believed in the specialized distributor. So in fact, he kind of got that position even enhanced more for himself to follow his beliefs of just how important distribution was to the manufacturers. So in doing that, and, you know, I don't know that we ever went into it in great detail, but he just really, it was kind of a boys club back then too, you know, and talking to these guys and really saying the same thing to different distributors across the country, then formed Nailed, because Westlight, our company, didn't even come into play till 1981.
So he helped form Nailed as a vendor member.
Yes, probably back in the day, yeah. If it was 76, 77, yes.
And then he joined as a distributor member, so he became a distributor after.
Correct.
Oh, interesting. When did you attend your first convention?
1982.
82, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
We won't ask you how old you were, but you weren't working in the business then, or were you?
I did start to work in the business then. Okay. I graduated high school in 1981, so I'm 55, guys. Thank God for, you know, hair color, the rest of it. So I've been doing this since Westlight was started in June of 1981, and I went to work for my parents part-time. So both my parents started this business, really. My dad had the background, but my mom, and she's 88, and she still works in it part-time as she wishes, you know, and does telemarketing calls.
Wow.
Really, you know, I started back then. So I went to college for about 6 months, did more of the accounting, the finance side, really thought I'd go into accounting or psychology. and just started in the accounting phase of it, kind of arguing with my teacher, going, this doesn't make sense, because I knew in the real world what we were doing in the business, so it was a more of a conceptual thing. So started to work for them for a little bit, left because I didn't care for Los Angeles at the time, and then moved back and went to work for the New York Times in production and marketing, and then really fell for my passion of marketing. And then got sucked back in 84.
How did you get sucked back in? What happened?
At that time, my parents were expanding and decided to go to San Francisco, and my job at the New York Times was changing. We had marketed the Bay Area, and that was kind of exhausting. And I was their first dual employee ever in the New York Times. They had two sides of the business that they ran, one for production, one for distribution and marketing. And so that side was ending. I was in talks with them, and then my parents presented me, well, if we came to San Francisco, would you come back to work for us? And you would be up there. So kind of talked to both of them, and they kind of convinced me. So
Nice. So you guys have been a member of Nailed since it started in West, well, since you guys started your business in 81. How has it
yes.
changed in the last however many years that
How much time do we have?
Yeah, we got that. About an hour.
It definitely, some things have changed greatly, just like this industry as a whole, right? But a lot of things are still the same. A lot of things as far as connecting with you guys and the networking, we all talk about that. How do we get more networking and exchange of ideas? And I'm even amazed because at the times that we go now, we're probably one of the larger distributors in the organization at the time. And I usually do pull something back from one of the conventions, either from a speaker or from talking to any of you guys. And, just for my dad's plug, he used to have a lot of what we called Hermanisms. So one of his Hermanisms is not any one of us is smarter than all of us put together. And it's true, so I'm always learning. We're always all still learning. So I think, that part, the learnings aspect of it, and just what you guys have done, kind of being out there in the frontier. This is amazing. I've watched, I think, all the podcast, which is tough for me because I don't have a whole lot of time.
You know, the reception to this podcast has been, I would say, easily beyond our wildest dreams, that's for sure. Than when we started it, you know, now I kind of understand why people listen to the show, because really when we're talking, we're kind of unpacking our own thoughts. It's really Nailed style. It's listening to the podcast is like in some ways being at a Nailed convention. You don't get to speak up, so that's a good reason to join Nailed. You can join the conversation rather than just listen. What we really want, what one of the things we wanted to talk to you about, which has been sort of a general theme in our society and something that, you know, has come up, that the lighting business is is really a bastion of masculinity. And were you the only woman working in the woman working in the business when you started, that you knew of?
No, as I said, my parents, started
Or
it
your mom,
together.
sure.
The joke used to be, Dad, can you sell her, 1% so we could be women owned? Because they owned it equally, right? And that was a very important thing and still is sometimes for us. So, at the time, no. I mean, my sister was in it. She still is very active in the lighting industry. She has her LC. So no, there was a few of us women, but I think you're completely right. I mean, when I went to the Nailed conventions, I could count on it on my hand how many women were there on one hand, and just like women presence, like I presidents, I had served on the board. I made the decision not to continue and go on as a president, but I was passionate about things. That's why I started the marketing committee. Before I came on, there wasn't a marketing committee for Nailed. Yeah, but
Why does the lighting business seem to be attract more men on the distribution side? I mean, the lighting design side is, I think, a different area of the business that is, it does not seem to be this way as much. Why do you think the lighting business seems to attract mostly men and continues to attract mostly men?
well, I don't know. I'm probably not the best person, as I said to you, to talk about that because I really don't look at it that way. I really don't. And I
Tell us how you
think,
look at it.
well, I think the stereotype is changing somewhat, but I just think, there's a lot of women that are in the industry and not well recognized. So is it a boys' club? Maybe, engineers. And if you look at some of the statistics, because you made me go do my homework, because I've never really thought about it. I guess I thought about it. I would see guys there, but I've never been a shy person, as both of you know, and I'll speak up anytime and, exchange my ideas. But, when I look at it, and I ran some numbers here, like in manufacturing and wholesale for sales reps. So it's 29.1% of women, 70.9% of men. And, why is that? People have said, well, it's not a sexy industry, but I don't know. I was in cars and newspaper before this. That's not that sexy either, So why does it get associated that way? I've seen some things. There's an association called WILD, and it's Women in Lighting and Design. So there's an association. Didn't even really know about it myself either. I hadn't, gone out to look for it, but it's a support, and they talk about this whole industry thing and women and, what to empower us and to help and mentor more women into it. So, lighting as a whole, I don't, I think if you ask everybody, did anybody pick this career? There's a few, that may be from the electrical engineering or the engineering side, but I don't think that either of you came out of, college thinking I'm going to go be a lighting salesperson, So I don't,
I don't think anyone really, I don't know anybody that's come on this show that chose to be in lighting. Greg?
I would agree. Yeah. I think it just kind of comes to you. However, different avenues for everybody, but we just got into it and that's where we stay.
So I don't think anyone really chooses to be in lighting. And I found that some of the most dynamic personalities in the business that I've met over the years have been women. Janet Wright pops into my head right away as a person that's, very, no problem speaking her mind. And then just names are escaping me at the minute. But I know that in the past, when I've met women in the business,
Becky
they've always seemed,
Phillips.
Becky Phillips, another one, ex-president of Nailed. There's trying to think in my head, Greg, a bunch of other ones. I'm losing it right now. I should have prepared a little bit for the show, but I've always found that the women in the business seem to be very, very dynamic leadership, not afraid to speak up and all that. Is that because they are the only women in the business, or they're very rare, or is it just because they are super confident, not afraid to work in a man's world, more comfortable maybe in with men? I mean, some women are more comfortable working with men than working with other women.
Probably. I mean, but I think also, I think just in any industry, I mean, if you're passionate about it, you're going to stand out. And I think if you have something to say and you've done your research, you're going to stand out. And it's almost like I said to you, it's sad to me that we do put a stereotype on it, that we do say, or like we're talking about women in lighting, right? Instead of like just, about us
People
or
in
what have we
lighting?
done? That we're, yeah, why are we segmenting it? And but it probably, like I said, I'm even intimidated for as many years as I've been there sometimes trying to break into your little groups. And it's funny. And I know you all, but I'll walk up and depending on the conversation, what you guys are talking about, it might change.
That's 'cause
It's
Spencer.
true. Well, look at you guys. You laugh and giggle, but it's true. So, and I have three boys, right? So, I grew up as a tomboy. And call on engineers and a lot of people in this industry that we're calling on is a male-dominated field.
I think women can excel sometimes. Sometimes you're better off. Like there's an argument that if you have an advantage if you're willing to enter those realms where maybe you stand out in a way. There you're st it's pretty easy to stand out when whatever it is, 5% or 10% or even 30% of the people are women or of any different identity group. It's a lot easier to stand out. I just think a lot of people don't want to stand out. And I think that's part of the challenge. And maybe, I don't know if barrier is the right word, but in some of these situations, people, the fact is they don't want to stand out. They want to blend in.
That's true. I mean, you see that in some of the round tables that we do, some of the same people always speak up. So it's always a challenge to get new individuals to speak up because they're afraid to be on point or maybe they're wrong or you're in a big group. So I think, you'll see when we go into those small round tables, don't you get more of an engagement from everybody at the table than rather in a mass. So I think that's true of human nature, right? Nobody wants to fail or be judged or, looked at sometimes. And some people love the attention. And sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, can I get those people, to be quiet at this point? So, but,
I know
it's
someone
funny.
that might fit that bill. I don't know where he is.
Oh yeah. But even, if I was looking too, so there was an interesting, as I was Googling some of this preparing and, like chief executive officers, when you look at that, women 27.3% compared to 72.7 of men. It's interesting, and still to this day we've come milestones from where we've been, but women earn 81.3% of a medium salary of a man for doing the same position.
Those statistics are, I don't know. I've read those statistics. I've looked into those statistics quite significantly. There's a book out there by a guy named Warren Farrell that's called Why Men Make More Than Women. And if you start digging into those statistics a little deeper, you find it's not as clear as it's made out to be by that movement, that there are significant reasons why. If you were to ask yourself why some people make more money than others, and you were to describe that those people, more men would be in that camp than women. So there's different issues involved in those statistics that are not as clear. And in some cases, women actually are paid more than men. For doing the same job. It just depends on how you sort out those statistics. There's a huge cultural battle going on over that I don't think belongs on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. But a lot of times those particular statistics about pay are not fully unpacked for people in terms of how they're represented. So I don't
But
know. I don't.
it might relate back to what you're saying. So it's just like I tell my salespeople, are you asking for what you want? Are you asking for the order? Are you asking? So maybe, again, certain women stand out in your mind because they're dynamic and they ask for it and they put
Sure.
it out there. And maybe those are the women that are excelling, And I think, maybe they are a little bashful if it's more guys. Sometimes
Okay.
I like more of the challenge, so who knows?
I got a thing. I'm going to just put it out here on the show. I don't even think women are a coherent special interest group. So they're Get a Grip on Lighting listeners. I don't think that you can break women up into a group and call them women. I think there's all sorts of different kinds of women.
Right.
Just like there's all
Right.
sorts of different kinds of men. And
Yeah.
from my perspective, especially talking to people about this and people that I really trust, I don't think women want to be categorized as women as well. From what I've talked about with some of the other people that Greg and I did not agree to come on the show, but that had some thoughts about this, some of them resented actually being asked that. Like,
Right.
why, women in lighting. What do you mean women? Like you said, I don't understand what you're talking about. I don't feel like it's ever been a barrier for me in that sense. And some of them actually expressed that it was an advantage. So I don't know if this
Oh, I
industry
agree.
has a glass ceiling for women. I'm not sure.
I think all do a little bit. I mean, you guys both chuckled when I talked about, when you first met me, what did you think? Maybe that's a good question. Maybe I
I
need
thought
to,
you were
like.
tall for a girl.
But
But I'm short, so what do you want?
you didn't think that about Greg when you first met him. Did you sum him up by that? So.
What did I think of Greg? I don't know if I thought that way about you. Listen, there's always going to be distinctions. There's men and women. Well, I don't want to
Yeah.
go into the bathroom issue, but
No,
there's
no, no.
always going to be separations between men and women, and there's always going to be jerks out there that make decisions about things based on criteria that doesn't matter. But I would say the vast majority of people are looking for to people that show up on time, that do a good job, that care about their career, that want to serve the customers and want to be a part of Westlight or Premier Lighting or Atlas Lighting or whatever and really contribute. So I don't think that this industry has a problem with that. I'm willing to say that on the show. Greg, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I would say so too. I think I've mentioned in previous podcasts that, I work with a lot of women here at my company and have in all of my jobs, and I don't really even think about it much until we sit down and talk about it in a situation like this. So I don't see it as a
Yeah.
big concern.
You know, Kara
I think
McGlogan
that.
said that when she came on, I don't know if you listened to the inclusiveness podcast with her, and we talked at length about it. And she had said, take a step back and make sure your process is not
you know, discriminating for any reason against people. And then after that, see who the best person for the job is. And I think that's a good way to look at it. Just take a step back every now and then and say, is there anything here that's standing in the way of someone succeeding? And if it is, move it out of the way. You know, and, you know, other than that, I mean, we've had lots of conversations at, in the hospitality suite, Brenda, over the years.
Oh, yes. So, oh, yes.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
So, about business.
There have been some good ones. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So
I think you're exactly right. I don't think that we should put a label upon it. And I think those times are changing. Those were times of our parents and our grandparents as well, you know, and back into the 50s when the woman stayed home. And, you know, I see more men now, in fact, go and change baby diapers than I see sometimes women, which is great, you know. And so I actually even fought for this at my son's college, like, okay, in the men's bathroom, we need changing tables, you know? I mean, I think we are moving away. Well, we do, right? If the guy takes it, what are you guys going to do? You know? So I think we are
on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. That's
bathroom floor.
That's what I was worried about with my grandchild. Right. But I think we are moving into that. I think we are moving into where it's not the best, you know, it's not a separation. And I think you're exactly right, Michael. I mean, there's a lot of times where it's an advantage for us, but then, you know, it's up to us to show our professionalism once we open our mouths. And once we, you know, we can get in the door. Guy will probably let me in the door before he's going to let one of you guys in the door, maybe, you know, just because. And then once we start talking, as long as I know what I'm talking about, then he's going to keep the conversation going. And then he might buy from me and, you know, point out all the different, you know, scenarios about that. But I agree. I have, you know, several women here. I have 7 women managers. I have one that's a warehouse manager.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice. Doesn't so are you going to join Wild?
I did after doing this work. But I isn't it funny, I've been in this industry 38 years and never went there before.
What's the website? Let's put it out there with people that are listening.
I've got it here. womeninlightingdesign.wordpress.com.
yeah, but it's women in lighting and design, because I thought it was just design at the first part. So
yeah, the website though doesn't have the word "and," but
yeah. Yeah. As you click on it, it has like a little, you know, and plus sign or whatever. So there's some interesting, they had an interesting podcast on there, like a girl. So like, show me what a girl looks like running. Show me what a girl looks like throwing. And some of the older, or, you know, people more our age would slow it down or make it less impactful. But the younger girls on did it exactly like what we would stereotypical a boy, right? They ran as hard as they could. They hit the bat as fast as and hard as they can. So I'm glad we're breaking that ceiling, and I'm glad you brought it up. But, you know, like I said to you in the beginning, you know, why are we talking about women in lighting? Let's talk about lighting.
All right, let's talk about lighting then. Okay. So we, in the beginning, so you're a traditional lighting supplier, lighting distributor.
So give me your definition on traditional.
So you have an order desk and counter sales, and you have a little bit of online business. People call in and they come to your counter, and you have sales reps on the road that make commission based on selling people light bulbs.
Okay.
Do you do a lot of projects?
Yes.
Okay. So you're doing a lot of incentive processing of applications and that sort of stuff in your markets?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's what everyone in Nail's doing. What percentage of your business?
New store construction as well.
Oh, you do a lot of new construction as well. Okay.
Yeah, we did for some time. Yeah, political. I think that's one of the things I've always learned, that you can't just put all your eggs in one basket. And, you know, people might look at our business and say, oh, you're pigeonholed. We were known for a long time because we had a lot of state. We had the state of California lamp contract for many years, and we have it again for a portion of it. And because they started breaking it up. But, you know, people would say, oh, you're a political distributor. And so I have this discussion with manufacturers all the time. No, you know, I'm a distributor. Same thing as we were probably one of the first distributors that had all three brands. Because back in the day, the manufacturers wanted you to be GE exclusive, Philips exclusive, you know, Sylvania exclusive. And I said, you know, it's like shopping. I need to offer more than just one thing to my customers. Now, how do you keep all three of them happy? That's the trick. And you do have to keep them all happy. You know, you can't expect to get all the benefits from having those materials and then not having, excuse me, having, you know, giving something back and working with them as a partner.
Is that the governor of the state of California calling you?
My question on the big three is, do you still have to keep them happy like you used to?
Yeah, why not?
Well,
Don't you have to keep your manufacturers happy?
To some degree, I think I have a little more choice. We're not really. I guess the bigger question is does it matter really to have these three? I remember when I first started in Nailed, and we were not, you know, we didn't have GE, Sylvania, or Philips as a brand. They wouldn't even set us up really to start.
Right.
Now it's all three of them would. Yeah, all three of them must. All three of them would and have offered to set us up, and we are set up with two of them. But it's not like it used to be. And so does it really matter where it used to, and you have to buy X amount and you have to do this to get this marketing funds? And do you really follow it as much as you used to?
Oh, absolutely. Probably even more so. I think it's important. I mean, if they're your partners and you're supplying their product, if you're not working with your partners, what are you doing? You know, if you're not planning for your business, or you're not, as I tell them too, I'm not trying to recreate the wheel here. I really want to work with my vendors. You know, they've got larger marketing departments and larger departments, even though, you know, they've had a lot of cutbacks. What do you want to bring through distribution? What's your initiative? So that's how I, you know, I'm their customer, but I also am doing a job for them. I'm distributing their product. So if I don't, you know, custom pick my manufacturers and really try to move their product, I'm going to be less important to them as well. You know, so I won't sell everything out there. You know, I'm pretty picky about it. And I really believe in the partnership of my vendors, you know, and bring their products through.
So how many branch locations do you have, you say?
Five.
And where are they located?
Two in California, one in San Francisco, one in Los Angeles, one in the Phoenix marketplace, and then one in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Lexington, Kentucky. And then we used to have Florida.
And Florida, okay. And do you find that what those branches vary, or sell vary by location? Does one branch sell a lot more of one brand? And do you know why that is? Is it anything you can pinpoint?
Well, without being too, I mean, yeah, in California, we had the rebate train, I think, before anybody else, right? And everybody wants to be green and green energy. And then I say in Kentucky, you know, just the cost of electricity in Ohio is far less back there, right? And my joke is always, they're still burning coal back there, right? You know, so it does vary. The products vary in what we can push and what is more important in one location, the other, but there is a lot of similarities across the, you know, the line and across the country too. It's
isn't
getting
that
a
odd
bit
though?
More even.
I mean,
no,
Michael's talked about it before, but it seems odd.
It's market,
like,
level
it's lighting.
Pricing.
Well, sure, but what you're actually using lighting for is to see a task, right? Like everybody needs to see this lighting, but why use different in different markets?
I paid $4 a gallon gas up in San Francisco, and it was $2.99 in Phoenix when I was just there.
You know, it goes back to our argument of the lighting business is so regionalized, and you have you have your finger on the pulse of that. Cause, I mean, you couldn't get a different market than Kentucky to LA or to Kentucky and California. Those are two completely different markets. And it's interesting that you have, you know, you see some differences there, you see some similarities. I'm going to ask you the million-dollar question. You don't have to answer it. Can you charge more based on area? Like, is there different pricing strategies in different markets?
Of course. Yeah, market-level pricing.
Market-level pricing. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And do you have when you're doing that, like, you're looking at do you sell, like, a lot of T12s in Kentucky still as a comparison to another market where it wouldn't be any T12s at all?
I wish the manufacturers would stop making T12s and then we'd make our jobs a lot easier, right? I mean, I say that all the time. We make too many damn light bulbs and help us, you know, retrofit more by obsoleting more. But yeah, of course, we move more T12s and older sockets back in the Midwest or certain areas than we do in California or Phoenix. I mean, even California and the Phoenix marketplace are quite different, you know, and other areas of our business. We also recycle use lamps. So that's a big difference in different states. So
recycling has been adopted more in different states.
Absolutely.
Is that a user thing or is that a regulation thing or what would drive that?
It's both. Yeah. It well, I think it's I wouldn't say user, but some of it's user. Some of it is more of the states and regulation. California has a regulation for it, but who enforces it? And I've had customers, you know, a couple of our Fortune 500 companies that are our customers say, well, I want no waste and they want me to recycle halogen. And I'm like, I can't recycle halogen. I don't care. Just get it out of here because we don't want it in our dumpster because we're weighing our garbage for our zero waste.
So. Now, a lot of people don't know that lamp recycling is really mercury capture. That's not really any recycling going on other than the end caps of the tube. Correct. It's just capturing the mercury so it doesn't get released into the environment. Sorry, Greg, I interrupted
you. Well, they recycle the glass. Okay. They do.
The glass is used from fluorescent lamps is used primarily as a cover on landfills to keep animals from eating the garbage. That's called recycling, but the recycling is broken down into a lot of different categories. So that would be what they consider a beneficial reuse. So it's crushed and sprayed onto landfills. That's what recycling of lamps is. Now, okay, correct me if I'm wrong. No, in the States. In the United States, that's what it is. So, yeah, lamp glass from fluorescent lamps cannot be reused for anything, really. Phosphor can be used in paint sometimes. I know a lot about lamp recycling, but...
Well, sorry, Greg, it's not the mercury. You're absolutely right. So the mercury doesn't go into the landfill, into the groundwater, right? Right,
exactly.
But it's just like you separating your trash. I mean, the plastic is used a little bit more, you know, and you can recycle that and make it into different things. But it's just really about decreasing our landfills. Yeah.
Agreed.
So which location out of the five that you have seen the most growth in the last year? I mean, you could say state or location, whatever you're comfortable with.
You know, they're all a little bit different. I would say that the Phoenix market was definitely, I would say, a better growth in the beginning as far as project. They probably started project business more than California and the Midwest. I'd say California, as far as basically recycling and energy efficient products and just the rebates, really drove a ton of that. The rebates were ridiculous out here. And as you guys talked about rebates the other day, you know, now they're getting where they're not making as much sense, right? They're focusing. But, you know, we got to ride that wave for a long time. I didn't have to ship anything, you know, via pallet. It was all electronic out here. So thank goodness. Yeah. But, you know, as far as reporting it. But,
yes. My banker's boxes. Oh, I've gotten a few emails on that already from people.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. Recycle that paper.
Yeah. So, well, you know, go ahead, Greg.
I just, the whole California thing really throws me off, not being, you know, in that marketplace at all. But why is it so different? I know it's government related, but are there certain requirements you have to do on every lighting project? I've heard, you know, this Title 24, you have to control every light you install. You can't do line driven, that kind of thing. What can you and can't you do in California that's different from your other locations on lighting projects?
Well, you know, I don't want to get myself into trouble here, but, you know, like anything, it all depends on whether you're pulling a permit, right? So right. How many of your lighting upgrades are permit driven?
On this show, 100%.
All of yours are? Yeah, no. Right. So, I mean, as far as you're saying, so let me understand your question a little bit. You mean as far as what in the California marketplace?
Yeah, what do you have to do differently in California than Phoenix if you're going to do a lighting project? Are there certain things that you have to add in because you're in California that you do not have to add in because you're in Phoenix?
Well, and there's sometimes we'll add it in, of course, like you said, Title 24, and depending on, you know, what factors into it. But there's sometimes, too, that we can add in those controls and get more of a rebate, you know, in California that they're not rebating in other states. Also, the fact that I think Californians, you know, they're, you know, known to be more green, right? We drive more electric cars. We're the weather permits that we're outside more and, you know, all of that. So people, I think, have a better, I don't want to say better across the U.S. I don't want to make any, you know, stereotypes here. But, I think people just try to be more aware about the environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's we eat healthier, thing. Smoke. Yeah, the whole thing. You know, and I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, so I'm not a California girl. So, But it is. It's just it's a different whole type of thing out here.
How has Amazon affected your business?
You know, not a ton. I mean, are your customers really looking at Amazon for their lighting products?
I would say so from my distribution side of my business, we were a small order shop with lots of orders. So we would our average order size was, I don't know, maybe $190 back in before the project stuff, and still continue to be. And we've seen definitely a reduction in the small order category of replacement lamps. Part of that is because everybody's retrofit, but I think a lot of that is because people are gravitating to online retailers like Amazon to buy a lot of different things. And so we've seen a reduction for sure in small order stuff, strange ballasts and stuff like that. People seem to search online first, for sure. I don't know, Greg, do you feel the same way about that?
Yeah, we've definitely seen a reduction, and I think that's natural for people to do now, is they find a hard to find item and they'll Google it for sure.
But if you think about it, were those the customers you really wanted? Were those the onesie
True.
twosie customers? Were you making money off of them?
It's
It's the
hard to
80-20
say.
rule.
Yeah, it's hard to say because everything's a project now. So we're so focused on, getting people out of fluorescent technology and into LED that my business, what drives revenue, what drives growth, is so much different than what it was 10 years ago. It's almost impossible to compare. You know
Well,
how
would you
much.
say if you had to equate your business percentages, how much is MRO, material replacement orders, right? And how much is project? Has that
Oh.
shifted a
Well,
ton?
yeah, it's gone from 100% MRO to about 30% maybe now in 17 years. I don't know. What about you, Greg? Something like that, similar?
I would say, yeah, about 70% project, 30% supply is what I call it,
Yes.
MRO. Same thing. Yeah.
So
And
for us, our MRO is still going strong. Still going
what would
strong.
you say percentage wise?
I'd probably say we're more 70 MRO, 30 project.
That's because you got that governor of the state of California calling you. That's what it
I think
No.
it's changed for us. We were probably before the Amazon, we used to do direct mail, and that was a huge thing. But we would get in a lot of, onesie twosies, but we would get a lot of the midstream businesses, right? Where they would come in and buy a case of lamps, here and there. And we really have gone through different processes in our business. We look at it, annually, and I look at it with my managers, monthly. They get monthly reporting numbers, they look at it, and then we have manager calls every 2 months. And it's really about, the weed and feed and what customers are we going to grow, what customers are we going after, which ones are we not going to spend as much time with. And
Yeah, I agree with
that's
you that
helped
there's
keep
like
some of it.
80-20, but I always found that now that you got me thinking about it a little bit, like, do I care about that $50 order? In
Right.
retrospect, I
How much
found
money did you make on that $50 order?
Well, here's the thing. I would say like 1 in 50 of those translated into a nice customer down the road. Like we would
Sure.
service all 50 of them profitably. You'd ship it to the guy, whatever, COD. And 1 in 50 of those guys was like a gateway to a much bigger customer that you were able to service. And I think that's kind of what Amazon has evaporated for us, is that natural introduction through a hard to find item of a new customer that ends up being a very valuable customer. One of my biggest customers, actually, now in retrospect, came from some weird program start ballast, magnetic. Remember when they had hybrid electronic ballast? I don't know if you guys remember that. They used to have these ballasts that were hybrids. And I found them this ballast, and then it ended up translating into being a very big customer of mine over the years. So I that part of the business is gone, and it was like a way of bringing in new people, like refreshing your customer base on a regular basis in the lighting business, that I think Amazon has taken a big bite out of that for me,
But I think
and the
that
MRO
customer's
side.
still there. I think all that Amazon's done is take away the guy that was going to buy one ballast and never do anything else because
Maybe.
that guy can't get what he needs off of Amazon. If he needs to do a project or if he needs to do more of his facility, he can't get that from Amazon,
I think that's the
right?
fear, though, is that that's where it's going. Is that, yeah, right now they're taking those orders, but maybe in the future they're going to be taking more orders. I don't, and it, we had a big whole show on Amazon, but I feel like that, bulbs.com, Mike Connors came on and he was talking about Amazon, and he feels like He's a little nervous about it. He's an online retailer. We're not primarily right. online retailers. We're more regionally right. focused on our traditional sort of style and projects. But he was worried. He was Greg, would you say he was legitimately concerned about the future?
Yeah, he definitely was, because I think, you know, companies like that rely on that business. And if they're not going to be the top search for the low price, right. it's going to be hard to compete.
Right.
Yeah, it's a race to the bottom there. On the if it's not hard to find online, it's low price. That's the one problem with online.
I think you've got to look, you know, it goes back to what I said about your customer mix. So if you guys are at a 70% project and 30% MRO, and you're selling stuff that lasts 10 years, mm-hmm. where are you finding the new business?
Oh, we're swinging from the trees with knives in our teeth every day.
So, you know, you can't have all your eggs in one basket, right?
Yeah,
so you really do. And I think that's where distributors are also looking at, and I don't know if you guys have ever seen what's called Facing the Forces of Change.
No.
So that's, it's another great series that actually NADE put out, and it was basically about distribution. So, you know, you're either going to stay, you know, a lot of distributors that are middle of the road, you're either going to have to get really large, or you're going to have to get really small and specialized. Hmm. But you're going to have to figure out the changes in distribution, you know, to stay alive. And how are you going to do it?
That's a question. That's what the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast is all about.
But, you know, in the same sense, I've had to push some of my salespeople. They don't want to sell projects. They're like, well, that guy, you know, if I sell him, he's going to be done. I've lost that socket. And I'm like, well, if you don't do it, somebody else is going to. So it's got to be a mix, right? It's got to be a mixture of things. Definitely. But it's just,
I know I could do a lot better on hanging on to my customers after I do a project. I know sometimes you'll do a massive upgrade and then you're like, you're out of there. I don't know, Greg, you feel the same way? I don't know. It's like that building is done.
Yeah, you feel that way, but I think there's a chance of it coming down. I felt that way when I did fluorescence to people, you
sure.
know, at least done for a long time.
I love the way you said that, when I did fluorescence to people.
But have you really gone back and analyzed? So on some of your projects, how much business have you done afterwards with that company? So unless you
after
offer
an LED.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you've done the whole building.
Right.
Right. Then defective. You look at distribution like us. We also sell batteries, right? We do recycling. Michael, you said on one of your podcasts, how many different things are you doing in your business? How many different divisions do you have?
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, Greg, or you guys have anything else that you're selling besides lighting, even though we're talking about lighting, but lighting related products or services.
Yeah. Distracting, like to get really good at something. I don't know if batteries is like a little extension off lighting, but you know, to go far away from the lighting business, I feel like I'm kind of pawing around in the dark a little bit. You know, I mean, it'd be interesting to see if I could hook up with a plumbing distributor or something like that and really get more business that way. But I don't know, man. It's like, if let's say they canceled all the rebates, so there's no more projects. Let's say that happened,
right.
which is a possibility. I'm going to be, my business is going to shrink and I'm going to be going to specialty. That's exactly what's going to happen. Like, you know, you told that model where, you know, you're like this. If they came up right now, if they said all the rebates are canceled, man, it's going to be a bloodbath in Ontario. There's going to be people everywhere out of business and everyone's going to shrink massively. So I'm completely addicted to rebates, 100% rebate bus.
Well, but then you're putting all your eggs in your basket, right?
I know.
I mean, you know, you have to change. I mean, we used to do a ton of yellow page advertising, cut all that out years ago. We used to do direct mail, changed all that. I mean, another Hermanism. There's nothing as constant as change. There isn't.
There you go.
So
come on,
you.
Herman.
I know. He had some great ones, a great, great mentor there. So you do have to think about it, you know, and you do have to consistently, you know, try to change and keep up with the times if you're going to stay in this game. And I think that's true of anywhere. Like, you know, when you see a new store, you tend to go there, right? Because they've got something new. You know, there's a few of the stores that maybe you always go to because they're convenient or they're right there or you have a relationship. But it's funny because marketing is all about getting your attention and it will draw you in. You'll go and check it out. and you might buy something. So I think we as distributors have to continue to do that. And that's where it goes back to our vendors. You know, if nailed people, if you're not working with your vendors more on a proactive basis, and I'm probably killing myself, you should be. They're your partners. You know, there's a lot to be done there. And so see where they're envisioning this business to go to. They've got more focus groups and everything else than all the rest of us. If you're not partnering where they're going to go, you're not going to be around.
Greg?
It's good stuff. I think the only other thing, just on the supply side of the business, you think that's going to be strong long term? Are you selling a lot of LED product to people that have already installed the LEDs?
We are. I also, when I go out and do these things, or I'm talking to my people about their proposals, or I'm talking to a customer, I said, we're not selling light bulbs anymore. We're selling electronics. And so I said, you know, finally, you know, I've been doing this long enough that, you know, the ROIs didn't make sense. They were ridiculous in the beginning. But I think, too, we pigeonhole ourselves. So then it's like, you know, I tell everybody now they're like flat screen TVs, right? When flat screen TVs came out, you know, not everybody could afford them. Now we're in a society, nobody fixes anything. You used to take your TV. I don't know. You guys aren't as old as I am. You used to take it to a repair shop, or your VHS, you know, you don't repair anything. You toss it and you buy a new one. So, you know, I think we are still selling quite a bit. And then I just try to break it down. Like, okay, if they're, you know, how much, what's in your budget? It's again, back to qualifying the sale, you know, or what do they want to do, or, you know, what portions. So yeah, you really have to have further conversations, you know, with your customers. And there's still, if you look at the numbers, you know, us compared to Europe, we've only scratched the surface. And I was amazed. I was in Greece. I'm going to move to Greece because Greece needed a lot. I was just in Greece, got back from Greece and Israel, and I was surprised that they didn't have a lot of LEDs. I was really surprised. You know,
got to open a branch out there.
Get a Westlight. Westlight. Near East Light? Call it Near East Light.
Near East.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm ready. It's a beautiful country,
I think that's a good place to call. It's been 45 minutes for Brenda. Great. On the show. Are you the president of Westlight?
I am.
The president of Westlight on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Brenda.
Ooh, Kurtzon Lighting. Go to KURTZON.com, baby. Kurtzon.com. Specification grade, made in the USA. Been in business forever, Gregor.
They have. And, you know, in addition to all the great products they have, they also make sure that their product is DLC qualified and covered. On their website, you can see they have a link for DLC listings, other fixtures, and it makes it really easy to find, because you need that when you're doing rebates and lighting projects, as we talked a little about with Brenda about today. A lot of our lighting business is projects based. Mm-hmm. And to do that, to get the rebates, you need that DLC rating. And Kurtzon makes it easy for you to find and covers you from that side.
Yeah, you know what? The Kurtzon's, you know, the way they run their business, I got a lot of respect for the way they do it. They make good fixtures right in the USA. They, you know, make it easy for you to do business with them. Their warranty is the best, spot on, the best one I've ever seen in the business. So go to Kurtzon.com. Don't forget their Class 1, Div 2, their UL, Intertech, NSF, ISO, IP, and CCA certified. Also JAGA compliant. And check them out at Light Show West in Vegas, bro. Come on down to Vegas. That's right, son. I'm going to be there. Greg's going to be there. We might even be recording a show there, Chief Chavez. I'm getting my visa. I'm coming for you. I'm getting that visa. Going to be able to record in the U.S. again. And this episode of the podcast and every episode of this show is brought to you by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. That's NAILD.org, baby. Nailed.org. Check them out. Check us out. That's us. And thank you for listening. This is episode 45 with Brenda Puckett. Brenda, you were awesome. Brenda's as awesome as ever, isn't she, Greg?
She is. Always fun to talk to.
You know what? She was so impressive when I first met her. I think I met her like 15 years ago or something like that, 12 years ago. We're aging ourselves here. But, man, I really was always impressed with Brenda. Great businesswoman, really smart. So from Westlight, lots of history in the game. So thank you, Brenda, for coming on the show. This episode 45, Get a Grip on Lighting.
written on the rectory wall. There's a sign there for all. If you are lost, the Lord is there to find you.